Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Standing by, the Terry and Ted podcast is sponsored by the UPS Store Canada.
Standing by, another episode. I'm Terry DeMonte. That's Ted Bird. And as always, hi, Ted.
Hi, Ter.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Nice to be back.
It is nice to be back.
Another episode.
Yeah. Nice to have a title sponsor.
It is nice to have a title sponsor, and specifically this title sponsor, the UPS Store Canada. They got lots of places.
They have over 380 locations, and I've made it my life's mission to visit each one. That's what I'm going to do in retirement. I'm going to go and tour all 380 UPS Store Canada locations. That sounds like a pretty good retirement plan, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You'll be busy. Yeah. It's a lot of driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll see the small towns, yeah, too.
Well, you've already seen the one on Don Quixote, so you've had a start.
I've been to the one in Ile Perot.
Yeah.
Only 379 to go.
Ted sampled some of the packing peanuts, saw the mailboxes and all the other services that the UPS stores provide. It's an entrepreneur in your community that knows how to help you with your business. So this entrepreneur that runs the UPS store can help you with courier services, with passport pictures, with a mailbox address, with receiving packages, with picking up packages. He can make sure, or she can make sure, that you get copies made, faxes done, packing. Or if you don't have a business and you just want to send some stuff to your kids across the country who are at school, or you got to get Christmas presents out, they can help you with that too. Easy to find, the upsstore.ca. There's a location, I'm telling you, no matter where you're listening to this in Canada, there's a location near you, the upsstore.ca. Our title sponsor. Very special guest. We tried to get him for a couple of seasons, but he's now a giant of French media in this town, and has a hell of a story, who went from being basically the world's biggest hockey fan.
He was Tony in LaSalle.
He was Tony in LaSalle. Yeah.
Have I got that right, Tony? Yeah.
You
Tony
do, in LaSalle. You have it right.
Yeah. On and Ted Teven's show, yeah, is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah.
You're gone!
CIQC AM 600.
That's right. Ted Teven. I loved Ted Teven. When I was a kid, I was the ref. I would call in, and I was the ref when I was a kid.
Is that right?
So, yeah, it's a nice way to steer your way. Did we say it's Tony Marinaro?
We did not. No, we just said Tony from LaSalle, but everybody knows Tony from
LaSalle. Tony Marinaro is our special guest. Tony, thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Very excited.
If my mother would have told me one day I would be in studio with the great Terry DeMonte and Ted Bird, I would have been pretty excited.
We're flattered.
Tony himself, a longtime broadcaster, turned a successful podcaster and continues to be a broadcaster, and in fact has upped his game significantly because he's moved from the English Montreal media to French Montreal media, or French Quebec media. And that's a big deal.
Yeah,
and we were talking about it before the podcast, before we sat down. I want to go back to the beginning, though, Tony.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tony from LaSalle. You were a regular caller on Ted Teven's sports talk radio show.
Yeah.
Did you have aspirations of being a broadcaster while you were calling in to Ted Teven? Did you want to be on the other end of the line taking the calls?
I actually wished I was Ted Teven back in the day. So I probably started calling Ted when I was about, 13 or 14 years old. And it's funny because most of my adolescent years, my friends were going out and they were doing things that 15 and 16 and 17 year olds should be doing. And I was never part of that group because I would want to stay home and I would want to talk to Ted. Now, Ted back in the day was working a show that went from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. So, you know, I would always stay home, watch the games, non-game night prepare, talk to Ted, jump on a line, put the audio cassette in, press record.
Yeah.
Record my conversations, listen to them, send them to my buddies, and I quickly became popular with some of my friends who used to listen to some of my calls. Ted was great with me. I always got the feeling that he liked me.
He must have.
And I loved him. Yeah. So it worked out well.
What a character he was. He would have loved the character like you. He would have known right away that you were good for the show.
You know, I say this humbly speaking, really, but he believed in me.
Yeah, big time.
And he always believed in me. And one of the reasons why I pursued the business of sports radio is because one night, I remember I had called in to Ted Tevens' show, and I would fall asleep with those yellow Sony Walkmans, right?
Yep, yep.
With those
little headphones.
Yellow headphones that would go in the ears, right? And I remember him saying, it was around 12:55 a.m. or so, I remember him saying as he was signing off to Tony from LaSalle, "You have the goods to be in this business."
Wow.
And I thought, I knew that's what I wanted to do. I believed I could, but so many people around me thought that that's not a job that will go to someone like you, right? You got to be like born a star to do that, or you got to know people. And I didn't think I was born a star and I didn't know people. But when I heard Ted Tevens say that, it changed my life. It really, you know, when we talk about someone inspiring someone.
Put air under your wings.
It really did, yeah. That's so I kept on knocking on doors. Yeah. And
did you ever knock on his door? Did you ever have an opportunity to meet him and get mentored by him?
I had an opportunity to meet him on a couple of occasions. Unfortunately, when I did, it seemed like it was always the wrong timing. He was on the go. I remember CIQC AM 600 back in the day was in Verdun. And I remember one day I knocked on the door and I told him that I wanted to work there. And I spoke with someone there. I saw Mitch Melnick, came out. He said hello. I was a regular caller to his show too. And I told him I wanted to work there. And, you know, they wanted to start me off in sales. And, you know, I wanted to do whatever I could do to get my foot in the door to work on the radio. But I, you know, having said that, I didn't want to work in sales because I figured if I worked in sales, then I'm going to be stuck there. And no one's going to think that eventually I could end up working on the air.
Right.
And they're going to say, well, you're a sales guy. You're not a radio guy.
Right.
So I kept on knocking on doors. And the way it all came about is I was back in the day, I was working at Centre Hi-Fi Electronic. Remember that? And I went to a golf tournament. I believe it was the store's golf tournament. And I met Wayne Bues there, who was the sales manager at Schoen, and we started talking, and he said, "I recognize your voice." He says, "Do you call sports radio?" And I said, "I do." He says, "You call Ted Tevens, do you not?" Huh. And I said, "Yeah, that's me." He goes, "You're Tony from LaSalle." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Hey, listen," he says, "I run a hockey pool. Would you like to come out?" And I said, "Sure, take my number." So he got a hold of me, and I entered his hockey pool, and I won the hockey pool in the regular season. Then I won the hockey pool in the playoffs. And then a year later, I was working somewhere else, and he sent me an email, and he said, "Do you want to be a star? Call me." So I gave him a call, and he said, "Listen, I'm now the sales manager at the Team 990. I moved over, Montreal's all sports radio station." And he said, "We're in year one. We don't have a lot of money. We have a morning show with Mitch Melnick. And we'd like to have a post-game show, a Montreal Canadiens post-game show, to compete with CJD AM 800. And he said, "I'd like for you to do it." And I said, "Geez, thank you so much. But to be very honest with you, I'm not qualified to do that." And he said, no, "You'll be fine. You'll be great. You'll be fine. But I don't have any money to pay you." Story of my life. Mm. And or at least it went on to be for another decade or so. But all kidding aside, So I did that.
Did he literally mean not any money, like none at all, or just a pittance?
I got restaurant gift certificates. Really? $25
gift certificates. How radio is that?
It's a very radio story.
$25 gift certificates. And so I did that.
Cheap prick.
And I spoke to he's actually a great guy. But
yeah, he is a good guy.
I know you're saying it in jest.
I like Wayne. That's not on him.
No.
Yeah,
it's the business, and it was where he was working at the time. They were cheap pricks.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Believe it or not, some collaborators still do get paid in restaurant certificates, over 20 years later, I can tell you that. But anyway, not on my podcast, they don't. But now I'll say this. So I did it, And then, you know, everyone kept telling me, or everyone that was in the business, I would like to get people's opinions, and they would tell me whatever they get, they give you, like, just never say no. Just keep on working, keep on saying yes. So I kept on working. I kept on saying yes. And a month later, Wayne came back to me and he said, listen, good news. And I said, what? He goes, we got pretty good response and we've actually got a couple of advertisers on board. Would you like to do the Montreal Canadiens pregame show as well? And I said, sure, I'd love to do it. So now I'm going from my job, which was 9 to 5, and I make my way to the studio on Green Avenue, corner of the Maisonneuve in Westmount. And I jump on for the Habs pregame show. I finish that. If the Canadiens are playing on the road, I'm watching the game in studio. If they're playing at home, I'm watching it at the arena, of course. And then I would make my way back after the second period, watch the third period from studio, go on, do the post-game show, finish at around midnight, get home at around 12:45 or so. And that was back in September, October, November, December of 2002. I had got married the year before that in 2001. And my mother's calling me saying, what are you doing? You just got married. You're never home. Your wife never sees you. You're leaving for work at 8 o'clock in the morning. You're getting home at like 1 o'clock in the morning. You're going to get divorced, yada, yada, yada. And I said, Mom, all my life I wanted to do this. And my parents, God love them. But, you know, they wanted the best for me. They just didn't think it was going to happen in radio.
Right.
So they tried to tell me to go into business.
Right.
And this marketing. Whole conversation with your mom is happening in Italian, I'm guessing.
Naturally, right? It is. Actually, in Sicilian. Actually, in Sicilian. But I just kept on doing it. And then one day, Wayne Buse came back to see me and said, hey, with the advertising dollars that we got from the Montreal Canadiens postgame show that you were doing and the pregame show that you were doing, he says, we have enough budget to open up an afternoon drive. And ideally, we'd like to hire 2 people. We have 7 people auditioning, and why don't you audition? And I said, no, I'm not. Listen, as much as I'd love to, I'm not qualified for that. I wanted to start slowly. I didn't think I was qualified for that. And he said, you know what? Just throw your name into the hat. And besides, we're doing the auditions 2 at a time. You would make it an even 8, and we'll see what happens. So I did that, and it went pretty well. And so back in the day, I was working for a company called Caba Ilco. They're on DeCarrie and Jean Talon, and they make those access cards for hotels and stuff like that. And I got called into a meeting with my boss that morning, and she said, bad news, but your department is going to be moving to Winston-Salem, North Carolina in about 6 months' time, so eventually you're going to lose your job. So I'm like, oh, man. So I go back to my cubicle where I'm working, and I lost my job, and the phone rings. And it's Wayne Buse. And he said, made up our mind. You're going to be co-host of the afternoon drive with Joey Elias starting in early January.
The same day you got that call?
2003. Right as soon as I got out of that meeting telling me that my department was going to be moving and I was going to lose my job in 6 months, I went back to my desk. The second I sat down, the phone rang.
Coincidence is God's way of maintaining his anonymity.
Yes, and obviously it was meant to be.
Yep.
Eh? Was basically what you're saying.
Yeah.
So that's 2002, Tony.
That was, I started volunteering my services September 2002 to December 2002, and in January 2003.
You go on the air with Joey.
I went on the air with Joey Elias. Yep. We did that for about 2.5 years. Then Mitch made his way to the afternoon drive.
Yeah.
And I ended up working the morning show.
Right.
With different people over the years. And I did that for 2.5 years. And at the time when I was working the morning show, I believe Elliot Price was working at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I think Elliot really wanted to play golf. And so the best way for Elliot to play golf was for him to work the morning show and then after the show to probably play golf. There were probably other reasons as well. So Wayne Buse gives me a call and says, I'd like to take you to lunch. So he says, I got a great opportunity for you. I want to put you in the 10 o'clock slot. And I was really, really down because I felt like, man, am I being demoted here? And he said, I know you're down. Don't be down. And I'm going to tell you why. And I said, why? He said, well, number one, you're going to get your life back. You're going to love doing 10 o'clock in the morning. you especially with a couple of young boys, you're really going to love working 10 a.m. instead of waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
okay. He goes, and one day, trust me, you're going to thank me. Yeah. He says the
probably
other thing.
Probably going to live longer too.
Yeah. And he said, the other thing is that it's a very, very difficult slot. It really is. Expectations aren't very high because it is so difficult. There's not a lot of cars on the road at that time. But so he says, it takes a special personality to make something out of it. And he says, I think you got that personality. And if there's someone who can make something out of nothing, I think it's you. And he says, I think you're really going to shine by having your own show and going solo with your show. And I did that show for 14 years, and you know what? He was right.
And did it intimidate you when you first got the invitation? Did you think, shit, what am I going to do?
No. I believed in myself.
There you go.
You know, okay. I thought maybe it was a little bit too much too soon at the beginning. I also wanted to be humble. At the time, I was a humble guy.
Were you terrible when you started?
Yeah, I think I was.
You went, okay. Yeah,
I was. Were you?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That's God why awful. I asked.
Yeah. I was. The first show I did, Terry.
Terrible.
The first show I did, and I thought, oh, okay, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it. The second the light went on, I had to puke.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes up and then it goes back down type of thing.
Yeah, that red light.
I really felt sick. Yeah. But interesting story. Here's another one is that a couple of months in, I'm struggling. I'm not doing well because the reality is I was like a hockey player who was, a real good prospect. But the decision to whether send him to the National Hockey League or the American Hockey League and the Team 990 at the time and Wayne Buse decided to promote me to the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready for it. And so I wasn't very good at what I was doing. And I started to take a lot of heat in some of the papers, especially our very own English daily newspaper was saying, this guy is not very good. This guy's not very good. The text messages were coming in. This guy's not very good. I got called into the office one day. Wayne Buse is the sales manager. Lee Hamilton, the late Lee Hamilton, was the general manager. And they say, Lee says, things aren't going according to plan. The ratings aren't very good. You're struggling. And we're going to give you a month to turn it around. And we'll give you a month to turn it around. I understood everything. So that month, I put more pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't respond well. I struggled even more. So now we have a meeting lined up on a certain day that I got to go in at 9 o'clock in the morning. And when I'm going in, they're going to tell me if we keep going or if I'm gone. And the way I was going, I knew I was gone. I get in that morning. Wayne Buse says, come into my office. I go into his office and he said, Lee Hamilton was going to let you go today. He's going to fire you. Put my head down. He says he died 4 hours ago. Jesus.
Boy, oh boy. Wow.
I said, are you kidding me or what?
Wow.
He said, no. I said, how did this come about? He said, he had terminal cancer. And he says, even I didn't know. Wayne didn't know either.
Wow.
And he said, here's the deal, Tony. I believe in you. And I think you're going to be a star in this business one day. So I'm going to trust my gut, go back in studio, and prove me right.
And how did you go about that, Tony? Like a lot of us have, you know, all of us have had mentors or studied something or, you know, I used to, when I, you know, as a kid, I would pick guys that I really liked and I'd listen to hours and hours of their tapes and you don't want to copy them, but you pick a thing here and you think, oh, that's a good idea. I'll try that. Like, what did you do in order to polish it and get better at it? Did you have a strategy?
This is a great question. So this is what I did. The first thing I did was, back in the day, Robert Viro had a radio and television
school that
Wayne Buse suggested and said, I think you should go to the school. It can help you out. But when I started, I used to listen to a lot of sports radio. And the one guy who really impressed me out of all the analysts was Pierre Maguire. And I found that I tried to copy Pierre.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to sound like Pierre.
Yeah.
Well, at one point I realized I'm not Pierre. My English is nowhere close to Pierre's. I don't sound as good as Pierre. I'm not Pierre. And I know that this is probably cliche, and we've heard it 1,000 times before, but the turning point in my professional life really was when I just decided to be myself. And this is who I am, and I'm not perfect, but this is it. And I started to wear on people, and I started to get a loyal following, somewhat of a cult following. People understand that my grammar wasn't great. Still today, it isn't. And Wayne, we had a good meeting. He said, you know, all that stuff you read in the papers, he says, no, your English isn't great and your grammar isn't great. But guess what? You're like 3/4 of Montreal. Like, that's what it is. Yeah. And he said, you know what?
And it's not like you sound like Borat. Yeah. You know?
He said, you know what? Just be yourself. And Montreal's multicultural and they're going to embrace you for who you are. And the second I stopped trying to be other people and yourself. I was just Tony Marinaro, that's when I started to take off.
Yeah, there's an authenticity about that that you can hear when you work. And I'm curious about, did you mostly speak Italian at home?
With my parents, yes.
So were you raised in French or raised?
No. There was very little French upbringing.
Yeah.
So there must have been on the street, though. My experience with Montreal's Italian community, everybody's trilingual because they spoke Italian at home. They went to, in older generations, they went to English school and they spoke French on the street. And as a result of that, they speak three languages.
So I spoke Italian at home.
Yeah.
I spoke English at school and English with all my friends. And the way I picked up French is I used to find that the French papers used to have a good sports section.
Yeah, big time. That's
so true, I used to read the Journal de Montréal.
Yeah.
And I used to read La Presse newspaper every day and watch some hockey games on French television. And that's how I picked up French.
It's really fascinating to me, too, because now you're a French broadcaster. We're going to talk about that in a second, but we have to go to another friend of ours and say thanks to Sugar Sammy. Sugar Sammy is the sponsor of the Standing By podcast, I'm proud to say.
He speaks a little bit of French.
He speaks a bunch of different languages.
Yeah, he does, But he does a show called You're Gonna Rear. It's a bilingual comedy show, and he's on his second tour. And this time he's taking it across the country, and he's selling out across the country. He's doing bilingual shows that are selling out across Canada as he attracts those French language pockets in other parts of the country. Why are you looking at me like that? Are my wheels wobbling?
No. I was thinking about what...
We're a bit punchy, Tony. We've been doing like 3 of these a day for a week.
That's okay. I actually have a real good funny story on Sugar Sammy.
All right, let's hear it.
Well, it's not funny, actually. It's because he's funny. Is that a couple of months ago, I said, you know what? I want to find a nice place to bring my wife where we can have a good time. So I said, we're going to buy tickets and we're going to go see Sugar Sammy.
Mitch Garber said this this morning.
So I went on the website.
Yes.
It was sold out for
4 months. Of course it was. You can't get a ticket for love nor money.
So the first available date was in February. And then I'm thinking, okay.
You're doing our commercial.
There could be a winter storm, but he's worth it.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you want to buy tickets to Sugar Sammy, jump on it right away.
February 20th, like you said.
He put new shows on, and all the shows in 2023 are sold out. And then he thought, well, I'll do some more. And he put January 2024 on sale.
Done.
Sold out right away.
Yeah.
February 2024.
Selling out.
So to Tony's point, dépêche-toi.
Yeah. Get him now.
He's fantastic.
Oh, my God.
When I start going on YouTube.
Yeah.
To look up comedians to find people to make me laugh.
Yeah.
There's not too many of them. Yeah. Like I start and end with Sugar Sammy.
Well, and it's this really great, much like your story, a really great Quebec story.
Very Montreal,
intercultural.
Yeah. I love what he's doing with the whole English and French and all that stuff. And the way he pokes fun at them and pokes fun at himself.
Yeah.
I actually love his laugh.
Yeah.
Kicks up the leg every now and then. Yeah. He gives the laugh. And
what do you said he's got the perfect combination
of, I don't know, Tara, that was so long ago that I said that. He's got the perfect combination of likability and comfortability on this. Yeah. He's comfortable and he's likable and he's confident without being arrogant. And good night, everybody.
SugarSammy.com.
Yes.
Listen to Tony and get your tickets sooner than later.
Tony, you're going to have to take over. I think any minute now, it looks like we're both about to fall over.
How much does it pay?
I'm interested in where you started to get your feet under you. Like, you know, you talk about struggling and at the beginning and, you know, the conversations you had and the breaks that you had too, you know, that people gave you a chance and then somebody passes away and it all seems to be going your way. How long was it before you thought, I think I'm starting to get this. Like the car has stopped wobbling off the road. I'm starting to get this.
So I think probably at around year five, I started to say, you know what, I'm good, and people are listening. Yeah. And I think people know me. And at around year 10, I started to say, you know what, I'm getting pretty good at this.
Yeah.
And then probably year 14 or 15, I started saying,
I'm here to stay.
And you're 20 years in now?
I've arrived. I'm good.
Yeah, yeah.
You're 20 years in, Tony, or 20 plus now?
Yeah, so now, once again, I started in the business back in September of 2001. So we're 22 years of broadcasting for me.
And is there a moment, because I used to watch the press conferences, and I would watch, like, Bergevin would see you in the crowd.
Yeah.
And he get like a little sort of half grin on his face and say, "Oui, Tony." But that must be as a kid who grew up cheering for the Habs, that's got to be a buzz when the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens knows who you are and knows what kind of a question to expect from you. That's got to be a bit of a trip, isn't it?
It really is. Now, look, I pride myself on asking the tough questions. I want to be the voice for the fans, right? So if a fan is thinking something or would want to ask something, I want to be the guy on behalf of the fans to ask that question. When you have that kind of style, it can go one of two ways.
Yeah.
They can either hate you.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about, you know, the general managers or coaches or, you know, high-level athletes from other teams. Or they can respect you for asking the tough questions.
Yeah.
And I always thought, you know, they were pretty legitimate questions. And Bergevin respected me. Like, I can feel it. I can feel it that he respected me, that I would respectfully challenge him.
I think he got a kick out of you, too, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, no. We had, look, I'm going to tell you, like, we had a good relationship.
Yeah.
We had a good relationship, and he always made time for me. And I remember one day on a Sunday afternoon, he came in and, you know, I opened the garage for him, and he parked his vehicle. We went up to the studio, and we spent about an hour together and stuff like that.
Because I have to tell you, it used to impress the shit out of me that, you know, I don't remember it was during the season, but there are not too many people that can get the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens to come in and do a radio show.
Yeah.
And he used to do that for you.
He used to do that, and he was always very, very good with me, like I said. And when I disagreed with his opinion, we used to have a laugh over it. So I remember once we're at the Montreal Canadiens golf tournament, and I asked him what his plan is for Shea Weber, who's going to be his D partner. And I said, when, you know, if in your office in Brassard, who's on that whiteboard penciled in next to Weber? And he says to me, he says, Jordy Benn. And I look at him and I say, you can't do that. And he said, no, what do you mean, Jordy Benn? And I said, well, no, Jordy Benn is not a first pairing defenseman. And so it was my way of respectfully telling him I disagreed with him.
Yeah.
And it didn't make him look bad. It went really well.
Yeah.
And it sounded well. So I had a really good relationship with him.
I think, I'm going to ask you if you liked him as a general manager. I think he knew his hockey. And I think he understood his responsibility. And I also think that he had a pretty good sense of humor about his position and, you know, what he had to do with
I think he was quite renowned for his, and remains quite renowned for his sense of humor as a player. Apparently, he was a real prankster.
Yeah, yeah.
A real, like, he would play practical jokes on other guys.
Had a great eye for talent, Ted. He had a great eye for talent. He had more difficulty. He knew what individual talent was, obviously. He had a little bit more difficulty in putting together a team.
Mm-hmm.
And having that team be sustainable. The year they went to the final, the bubble year, that's the year they went, and he went all in.
Yeah.
And you know what? He came close. He went to the final.
Yeah. But, I was going to say, you got to give him credit.
But after, in that offseason, Phil Deneau walks. He ends up signing with the Los Angeles Kings. Shea Weber unofficially retires. Carey Price, we all know what happened with him and his issues. And then it all just fell apart, and some players left, and it wasn't sustainable. But Bergevin, his greatest strength was identifying talent. His weakness was managing people, was his way of communicating with players when things weren't going well. And not to say that he was one of those, you know, that he would scream and whatever. It's just that, instead of always remaining business, at times you got the feeling that it became a little bit personal.
Mm.
Bergevin and Radulov. Bergevin and Pacioretty. Bergevin and Markov. It didn't end well. Bergevin and Subban. Make no mistake. I mean, PK Subban wasn't just traded because they thought Shea Weber was a very good hockey player and they're going to trade, you know, for a very good hockey player.
He was run out of
town.
There
was a personality conflict there.
Yeah.
They just didn't like what PK was selling at the time. And that was one of the reasons why that deal went down. In Max Pacioretty's case, just didn't think, I don't think he thought Max Pacioretty was the guy who could lead his team going forward in terms of wearing the C. Max did not want to relinquish that seat to anybody. In Markov's case, Markov made the mistake of not having an agent and represent himself. Bergevin probably didn't take that conversation seriously. Bergevin wanted to offer him a one-year deal. Markov wanted 2 years. They split. In Radulov's case, once again, Radulov ended up going to Dallas for what was probably less money but more money considering the tax situation. But anyway, he knew how to identify talent for sure. Yeah.
Let's talk about your exit from TSN. And what brought that about, and what brought the podcast about?
So I met a family, the Cavallaro family. I don't know. I've repeated this story, I don't know, give or take 10 or 12 years ago. So I'm a little bit, as we get older, as you know, you lose track of time a little bit. So, but anyway, I've known them for at least a decade, all right?
Yeah.
And so Agnello and his wife, Rosa, are West Islanders. They live in Kirkland.
Are these the Cavallaro food people?
No, they're not.
Okay.
But they like food. I can tell you that right now.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So Agnello and his wife, Rosa, have two kids, Juliana and Sammy, Juliana being the eldest. And when Sammy was born, 9 months old, he was diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy. And the doctors told Agnello and his wife, Rosa, that Sammy wouldn't make it to the age of two. So Agnello and his wife, Rosa, started having fundraisers. And one of the events they have is they have a gala every year, and they do it on Valentine's weekend, and they call it Sammy's Valentine's Gala. So a good buddy of mine, Mike Moretto, who's been my neighbor since the early 80s, Mike grew up with Agnello. They played soccer together. And one day Mike gives me a call and says, Tony, I need your help. There's a great family. Their son has spinal muscular atrophy. They have fundraisers. And I'd love for you to be able to bring exposure to the cause and to the event and volunteer your time and not charge them. And I said, Mike, any friend of yours is a friend of mine. I'd be more than happy to do it. So I met them and gave my time to them. And over the years, we became, you know, pretty close. So Sammy today is 23 years old.
Wow.
He runs his own social media company. He has over 6 million followers on Instagram. Jesus, wow. He's got a Snapchat channel in Quebec, which is not easy to have either. And Sammy's a big sports fan. He really loves football and he really loves hockey. And Sammy, back in the day, would basically be in front of his television the way I was, recording fights or whatever, but he would get the highlight of the night in sports. He'd attach a bed of music to it, and he'd upload it to his account faster than you could probably find it on television. And his account on Instagram is Sick Highlights, and that account has give or take about 2 million followers. So he went from opening that account to another account, Sick Power Play, Sick Football, Sick This, Sick That, and he runs Sick Media Agency. It's a family-run agency. So, Agnello works with Sammy. Juliana, his sister, works with Sammy. And so about three and a half years ago, Sammy gives me a call and says, come over, I want to show you something. So I go over to their house, and he made a podcast studio downstairs. And he said, the next thing for Sick Media is I want to have the Sick podcast, and I'd like for you to be able to do it. Now, I was busy. I was doing radio full-time. I was doing TV every now and then. And my boy's playing soccer. My wife's running a business. To tell you the truth, I didn't have a lot of time. And how do you say no to Sammy? I can't say no to Sammy.
No.
I mean, this is he really wanted to have this podcast. And here's a kid who hasn't had too many opportunities to smile, you would think, in his life. And so I said, Sammy, I just need to clear it with my boss, and I'll get back to you. When I went to see my boss and told him that I was going to be doing a podcast on the side, it was met with some reservations, and I was told no. And you guys would know this, but back in the day in sports radio, we weren't making a heck of a lot of money. At least I wasn't. And it seemed like everyone there was doing something on the side, as a sideline.
Yeah.
To make ends meet.
Yeah. To make ends meet, right? Yeah. Well, to be able to pay the bills and maybe have something left over. And so I thought about it for a couple of days, and I stalled Sammy, and I didn't have the heart to say no to Sammy. So one day I just went in and I said, listen, everyone here is doing something on the side. I just want to let you know I'm doing the podcast. And that was it. So I did the podcast, and then I would go over to Sammy's house, and we would record once a week, and we were doing it to have fun. And that's what the goal was back then, and that's what it was all about, getting together, and then after the podcast, going upstairs, having a plate of pasta together. We were doing it to have fun. And the turning point in all of that, I think for me, there were a couple, but the major one was during COVID, we're still in it, according to some, but anyway, it's another story. Yeah. But during COVID, I was working from home. And the morning show was working out of the studio. The afternoon drive was working out of the studio, but the two midday shows were working from home. And I'm working from home, and while I'm doing my show, I'm noticing on Twitter that I'm getting word that the radio station in Winnipeg, the radio station in Hamilton, and the radio station in Vancouver all closed down.
The sports station.
The TN Sports. Correct. Yeah, TSN now, Sports Radio Station.
So they had 7 radio stations at the time, and 3 closed down. Within a span of an hour and a half.
Dropping like flies.
Now I'm doing my show. I have no idea what's going on, but I'm reading this. What do you think I'm thinking?
Yeah, we're next.
They're going to take me off the air in like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And at that point, I have no backup plan. I got nothing. What do I do next? I don't know how to do anything else. So, day's over. We survived. Thank God. I give Agnello and Sammy a call. Can I come over? Went over that night. I said, listen, I got the scare of my life today. 3 radio stations closed within an hour and a half. And it dawned on me, I have no plan B. I don't know how to do anything else. So I said, you know what? Let's try and take this to another level. And they said, let's go. So recording once a week became recording twice a week, eventually became recording 3 times a week, and eventually became 3 times a week recording and 1 live on Sunday mornings. But I always wanted to do it that way because I never wanted to have a live podcast while the radio was airing their shows at the same time, right? I didn't think that was right, so I never did that. And even on Sundays, I would only go live if, of course, there was no Montreal Canadiens game, there was no pregame show, there was none of that. If there was, I wouldn't go live at that point. So I was doing that, and it was starting to generate steam, and we were starting to attract advertisers. and we were starting to get viewers. And in my last year at the radio station, the podcast had reached 10 million homes. So at that point, I knew that the podcast made some uncomfortable.
Well, it was outdrawing the radio program, obviously.
I never viewed it as competition because my numbers at the radio station were great.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we were losing listeners because I had a podcast.
No, of course not. But right? 10 million is a big number.
Yes, it's a big number. Sponsorship was, that opened up a lot of eyes as well. And I think the major challenge in all of it was, and like today, I get it. Honestly, I understand. Just so you know, when I decided to go forward this, I had no problem if the radio station was going to be part of my podcast and I was going to take interviews that I was doing on the radio station and playing them on my podcast or taking stuff that I was doing on the podcast and playing it on the radio. They could have even put their logo up. I mean, I was fine with it, like whatever, you know, starting off, but no, it didn't work out that way. And I was doing my own thing. And I think the big challenge was the fact that all the radio shows that are on right now, they're all being podcasted. So they probably figured, how are we going to podcast your radio show? And then you're going to be podcasting or advertising your podcast on the side. I didn't see no problem because I was doing well with both. It's not like I was not doing well with radio. So, you know, it made them uncomfortable. I was made aware that it made them uncomfortable. And so at that point, I think I had a decision to make. And here's another funny story. And here's just the way sometimes you need to be lucky in life. As I'm going through this, I get a message on LinkedIn from a member of the management team of back then 91.9 FM Sports Radio, today BPM Sports Radio.
Yeah.
And the gentleman says, can you give me a call? So I give him a call. And he says, let's not beat around the bush. I want to know, is there any chance between us and Tony Marinaro? And I said, all right, so I'll answer it. I said, if you don't have a problem with my podcast, there could be a good chance. So he said, I don't have a problem with your podcast. I just want you to join our team. So I said, what do you have in mind? So he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, what do you want me to do? Well, we'd like for you to host a show. I said, I don't want to host a show. And he said, all right. And they said, so what do you want to do? I said, I'd rather be just like a collaborator. If I'm going to come on, I would rather be a collaborator. He said, why? I said, I'm going to be very honest with you. I want to build my podcast. And so I want to have a lot of free time to be able to do it. I don't want to host a 3-hour radio show. I don't want to host a 4-hour radio show. I want to really concentrate on my podcast. So he said, all right, let's talk. So we started talking, and then someone from the station got a hold of me and said, hey, I hear you're talking to the radio station. And I said, well, yeah, off the record between you and I am. But I said, well, you know, it hasn't gone anywhere yet. And he said, well, I'd really love for you to be part of my program. And I said, okay. And he says, well, I think I got something for you because I'd love not only for you to be part of my radio program, I'd love for you to be part of my TV show. So I said, all right, so listen, have your boss give my agent a call. And so the radio was talking with my agent and the TV was talking with my agent. And this is what I knew. I knew that I think it was on August 27th of 2022. I think it was on the 27th, could have been the 28th. But I think I think it was August 27th. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So I knew that the radio station was going to start their new year of programming because usually on the French side, what happens is the end of May, they all take off, they all go on vacation. They're off June, July, August. At the end of August, the book starts, the ratings start, everyone's got to be in. So I knew that they wanted to have me on board then. So if that was going to be the case, I had to leave the radio station on May 27th because I had to give my 90 days notice because of the different clauses that exist, as you know. And so at that point, I still haven't signed anything with radio. I still haven't signed anything in television, but we've had really good talks and I have a feeling it's going to happen. I wake up that Friday morning. I'm not feeling well. I feel stressed. I feel anxious. Everything just moving as quickly as it did, that, you know, the podcast took off and it made others very uncomfortable. And I had a decision to make. So when I woke up and I didn't feel good, I gave my wife a tap on the shoulder. She was sleeping. I was driving my son to school that morning. And I said to her, I said, I just want to let you know. I said, I'm going into the radio station today. And at the end of the show, I'm going to quit. My wife woke up and she said, well, what do you mean? And she knew everything that was going on, but she never thought I was going to quit the radio station. She never thought I was going to leave. And guys, to tell you the truth, up until that minute when I woke up that morning, I never thought I was either. I loved that job. I think you guys know that, right? Like, I loved that job. Yeah. Like, it's all I ever wanted to do. But I felt like with everything going on, it's time. And there was a part of me, too, that thought, you know what? If I stay here, how much bigger can I be? Like, I've been here for 20 years. I accomplished pretty much everything I wanted to accomplish. The only thing that didn't happen, very unfortunately, is that the Montreal Canadiens would have won the Stanley Cup while I was on the air, right? Yeah. Type of thing. But other than that, I did pretty much everything that I had to do. I mean, one book, I almost had a 15% market share. Like, what more?
Well, wow, and I would think as a not just as a broadcaster, but as a person, you look for bigger. You know, you look for the next step and bigger things.
And the upside on the French side is much greater.
Yeah, and it's a much, much, much bigger thing.
Yeah.
And so it was the impetus was the French side calling you. That gave you the push.
Yeah, well. Like,
that was.
You know, I was told that, you know, the podcast was concerning.
Yeah.
And that's something, you know, needed to be done.
It lacks so much, it lacks vision in so many ways because the podcast and the radio show are so complementary and could have been so complementary and beneficial for both parties.
And they could have ridden the popularity of the podcast to their advantage.
How many people listen to the podcast, Tony?
Last month, the podcast reached 3 million homes and probably had just over a million views. So, no, we're doing really, really well.
Yeah, like, that's...
things are really, they're really headed in the right direction. And so, you know, I get asked about, I miss you on radio, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much for everyone who tells me that. I loved it too. For those who don't compare radio and podcasting, it's a different world, like, you know, and, you know, you're hosting a 3-hour radio show or a 4-hour radio show. You get to talk a little bit about everything. You know, I grew up in Montreal. I love the Montreal Canadiens. I love hockey. I love soccer. I host a couple of podcasts. And my main podcast is the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro. It's an all Montreal Canadiens podcast. But anyway, and I'll make it very quickly. So, you know what? I drove to work that day. I did my show. And when I got off, on my way out, I told Mo Khan, who was opping the board, I said, Mo, on this last segment going out, I want you to play My Way. Because I think 20 years in the biz, or almost 20 years, 19 and a half, I think I did it my way. And I was very emotional when I got off air. I went into the boss's office at noon. I said, no easy way to say this. I'm handing in my resignation. He was taken by surprise. I was very emotional. And I don't think he ever thought that I was going to resign from the radio station because he knew how much I loved my job. And then I said, you know, I wasn't going to stop doing the podcast.
No, and you know what? 3 million people is, I mean, that's probably five times the English population of Montreal. It's clear to me that you're reaching Montreal Canadiens fans beyond Montreal.
Well, it's a global brand,
isn't it? It's a global brand now.
Some of the feedback.
So if you go on Chartable, pardon me, which obviously the ratings come out every week to show you how your podcast is doing. The Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro, there's people listening in Australia.
Yeah.
In the UK, New Zealand, and Brazil, and there's places where in Mexico where you wouldn't think, but there are Montreal Canadiens fans all over the world.
I hear you get calls on the podcast. You take calls sometimes. I've only heard calls from Canada and the U.S., but do you also get calls from other parts of the world?
I do, yes, I do. And, you know, it's something that we introduced at one point last year, but I love taking calls before when I used to work on radio. I love connecting with the people. And I said to Agnello, I said, you have to get me set up so that I take calls here because, you know, I understand radio was radio and I understand podcasting was podcasting, but I still want to take some of the things I did on radio and bring them to the podcast world. And so now I'm taking calls as well. So once again, the podcast goes Monday to Friday at 10 p.m. And when I was working radio, when I was working radio and I used to work at 10 a.m., when the Canadians would lose big or win big, people would go on social media or I would go and say, is it 10 a.m. yet? Yeah, people would have to wait until 10 a.m. Well, now they don't have to wait too long because it's 10 p.m. So if you watch the game, give or take 15 or 20 minutes later, I'll be on.
So you go live.
I go live.
Yeah.
The podcast goes live Monday to Friday at 10 p.m. Yeah. I was able to negotiate Fridays off.
Very good. Nicely done.
So I go Monday to Thursday.
Well, they hardly ever play Friday night, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I go Monday to Thursday at 10 p.m. and I put together a great list of collaborators. Mondays, Eric Engels. Tuesday, game night, Maxime LaPierre. Wednesdays, Craig Button. Thursday, game night, George Larac. On non-game nights, Mike Johnson, Grant McCagg, Simon Snake Boisvert, Anthony Martineau, Marc-André Perrault, Charles-Alexis Brisebois, Stu Cowan. I hope I'm not forgetting anyone. The list goes on and on.
Very good. You have very good recall.
Yeah, and you're merchandising as well. Tony, if you're listening and not watching on YouTube, Tony has a Sick Podcast hoodie, and it says, is it 10 p.m. yet?
I'm happy to say that. You know, we pay all our collaborators that come on.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And
because,
that's great.
You know what? Look.
Not with coupons?
I said to them, I said, guys, I can't be a collaborator on French sports radio and a collaborator on French sports television, get paid for my services as a freelancer, and then ask people to come on my podcast and do the same thing and not want to pay them. No, I mean, that doesn't work that way, right? And to show a level of seriousness, like this is a commitment. I want everyone... When I say you're on Monday night at 10 o'clock, I don't want to get a text message at 9:45 saying I can't make it. Yeah. Now everyone feels a sense of responsibility. It's great.
I want to talk to you about broadcasting in another language in a moment, but we have a couple of sponsors to thank, and we'll start by saying thank you to one of our newest sponsors, the folks at Accutech Electric.
Do you know electricity, Tony? Can you rewire a house? You're Italian. You must know how to do wiring. Don't you guys know how to build stuff?
I don't even know how to put a plug in the wall.
Well, all right. Well, we got someone for you to call.
And this is what surprised me, Tony, when these people called me and said, you know, we run this electric company and we're hoping that we could be part of the podcast and that you'll tell people what we do. And I said, are you sure? Are you sure about that? Do you know anything about me and Ted Bird? I can't hammer a nail. I can plug in a lamp, but I don't know anything about electricity. Accutech Electric is a family-run business. You know how we feel about family-run businesses. They've been at it for over 25 years. Tom is a second-generation master electrician. His father started the company all those years ago. And his father really believed in having a strong staff, educating the staff, providing them with a great work environment. These are all philosophies that we talked about before he decided to sponsor the podcast and Ted and I decided to go ahead with it. They do industrial, they do residential, they can do upgrades for your home. If you're doing a new build, they can handle that. If you want to change lighting at a warehouse, they know how to do that. They can also steer you, into things like hydro rebates. They will help you make decisions about your projects. Anything that requires expertise when it comes to electric needs, Accutech Electric, that's what they do. AccutechElectric.ca is where you can... Oh, I'm sorry. It's Accutech.ca. So A-C-U-T-E-C-H Ted.ca. Go to the website, find out how to contact them. They'll be glad to talk to you. And of course, I don't need to tell you, safety is their number one concern. And as Ted and I always say, when it comes to electricity in the house, you don't want to...
You'd like to have some.
Yeah.
You should have. That's what we always say. Yeah. It's always good to have fun.
That should be their slogan. Yeah. AccuTech Electric. You should have electricity.
And we can help.
Yeah. AccuTech.ca. See what I said about getting onto the podcast?
Yeah. Another one of the many things that Terry and I don't know how to do or don't know anything about is auto mechanics.
Yes.
And that's why we go to Urson.
That would be Merson.
That would be Thank Merson. You, Tony, take over. That's why we go to Merson Automotive on St. Jacques, just west of Cavendish. The last thing you want to do is get hooked up with an unscrupulous mechanic. And the Mersons have been in business for 3 generations and over 50 years. They are trustworthy. And that's why multiple generations of families, of customers, go to Merson, because they know that that is a mechanic and a tire retailer that they can trust there.
Yes. Family-run business.
It
been is. Had it a long time.
Yeah.
And we were just there the other day.
We were, yeah.
And we saw Kara Urson, and we had a nice...
We did, and we took a selfie, and yeah. I looked exactly like I look now, like this. It was my, I'm ready to have a nap. Can we finish the picture now?
Yeah, and you're not even working this week.
Yeah, I know. I'm telling you, Tony. Yeah. I'm so looking forward to getting back to work next week so that I can get up at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And go to bed at 11.
And be done by 9. Yeah, because these full days of doing podcasts, they're quite something.
Tony Marinaro
is funny because I sent Ted a text message. And I said to him, it was like 1:30 in the morning or whatever. And I said, shoot me the address of your podcast studio when you have a chance. And he wrote back right away. I thought he was going to write back in the morning. And I said, I'm glad to see I'm not the only one who sleeps, who has a hard time sleeping at night. And he said, yeah, I usually wake up to pee at this time. I said, me too. I said, I'll be up in another hour. I'll send you another text message.
Yeah, that'd be my 64-year-old prostate.
MersonAuto.com,
yeah, by the way. Sorry, yeah, sorry, Salsa and Carol.
Stop. Just stop talking.
Hey, they've been around for a long time, huh?
And yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's 1970.
That's the sign of a great business, obviously, because they've been able to adapt with the times, and it's a sign that...
Yes.
You know, the customers trust the place. They've been there. They like it. Yep. They do a good job. They go back.
It's Tony Marinaro from Merson Automotive. Yes. They're gonna fire us and hire him. Know. And I wouldn't
They'll
blame
be on
them.
His podcast.
I wouldn't blame them one bit.
Yeah.
Not one bit. I want to ask Tony a hockey question.
Yeah, okay.
Good. I actually have two hockey questions.
All right, shoot.
Because Tony is not only a very knowledgeable hockey broadcaster and analyst, he's a very intense Montreal Canadiens hockey fan. Let's go back to opening night at the Montreal Forum in 1843. No. Opening night at the Bell Center this year.
It was fun, guys.
See you later. All right.
Connor Bedard and the Chicago Blackhawks are in town. Bedard's the next big thing. He's the 2023 first overall draft pick. He's a generational talent. Every time he touches the puck, the fans boo. And I'm saying to myself, you assholes. What are you doing? And I tweeted, stop booing Bedard, you assholes. And I immediately got several responses saying, it's part of the game. It's a sign of respect.
Yeah, well, it's something that happens only in Montreal, that they boo the best players in the world.
Do you think it's a sign of respect?
According to those who do it,
yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't do it.
No, it's classless.
Yeah. Connor Bedard... won your country a gold medal at the World Juniors.
Yeah.
He single-handedly put the country on his back.
Mm-hmm.
2 years younger than everyone else, broke all records for a player at the World Juniors. So I wouldn't do it. But over the years, they've done it to a lot of stars.
Yeah, yeah.
They used to do it to Bobby Orr in Toronto when Bobby Orr first came in.
And mind
I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now.
I could be wrong, but they don't usually do it to Francophones. Like I don't remember, but Mario Lemieux get booed?
I think you might have a point there.
I think I
don't think Mario Lemieux or Mike Bossy got booed. Once again, I could be wrong. Yeah. I mean, I don't remember what I ate last night.
So. What, What's your other question?
My other one, other hockey question. And I brought this up on the air when I worked at TSN 690, and I was shouted down. Shouted down. I think the Montreal Canadiens should retire number 11 for Saku Koivu. Second, see, I can tell from the look on his face he disagrees, and I want to hear why. But here's the argument I make for it. Second longest serving captain in the history of the franchise,
yes,
after Jean Béliveau.
Yeah.
And what he went through publicly with his cancer battle, the two most powerful moments I've seen, maybe not only in that arena, but in hockey, period. Well, no, there's the Rockets ovation at the Bell Center.
Yeah.
Other than that, when Saku came back.
Which was the closing of the old forum.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry, at the old forum. When Saku came back, the first time he appeared in civilian's clothes at the Bell Center after his cancer battle, mm-hmm, and the first time back in the lineup, the two most, aside from the Rocket at the forum, the two most powerful moments I've seen, and what he did for the community and what he did for the Montreal General Hospital, all those things put together to me make a case for retiring his jersey number.
Yeah. So if he would have played for any other team other than the Montreal Canadiens, he probably would have had his jersey retired by now for sure. The challenge is, and this is the challenge, is that they haven't retired Jacques Lemaire or Steve Schott's number. You take a look at the amount of goals they scored and the amount of points they put up. And so, but I totally get and understand what you're saying. So there's got to be, for me, there's got to be something specially done for Saku,
mm-hmm,
so that Saku is remembered in this city and in this province and in that arena more so than he is, because they had a goodbye for him.
Yeah, they had a Saku night.
They had a Saku night, when I believe they were playing a regular season game versus Anaheim, which was his former team. And so, but there's got to be something more for Saku, but I'm not in for Saku's jersey being retired just yet. And let's not forget, even though he was the second longest serving captain in the history of the organization, and he had a chance to pass the late, great Jean Béliveau, and that's one of the reasons why I think that they kind of stopped it at there. But it was among some of the toughest times for the Canadiens too. It was, you know, they were okay back then, but they were not a powerhouse by any means. And, you know, their management teams were okay. Mm-hmm. And the Canadiens went through tough times when he was, you know, captain for that long. But they got to do something more, for sure.
So let me ask you,
I'm done. Yeah. Okay. No, I wanted to get his opinion.
Yeah.
And I respect Tony's opinion because he's very informed and he's a passionate Canadiens fan. And he didn't shout me down, so that's good. Yeah. I'll never forget that morning on the radio. I was gobsmacked at the vitriol of the reaction.
Yeah.
How dare I suggest that Saku Koivu's number be retired?
No, I think you can make a great case for it, for sure.
Tony, there's a couple of things about the current organization I'm curious to get your thoughts on. Where are we at? It's been a long, you know, other than the bubble years, it's been a long road. It's been a lot of, you know, a lot of bad luck. A lot of things have gone wrong over the years, and it's been a long time since we talked about a Stanley Cup. Do you like the current organization? What's missing? What are the parts that are missing? Because, you know, some nights, like the other night against Minnesota, you watch them and you go, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, Christ. And yet, you know, there's Suzuki and there's Caulfield and there's like a lot of these sort of, you know, standout parts, but what's missing?
So I love the organization.
The new gang?
I like the leadership team?
I do, very much. Yeah. I like Jeff Gordon, who's the executive vice president of hockey operations. I love Kent Hughes, as the general manager. I love Marty St. Louis, who's the head coach. Does his staff lack experience like Marty? Yes, they do. Is there an area in terms of the front office or management team in which I am concerned about? I'm not sold on their scouting department just yet. It's a couple of years in. There's been some good moves, some not so good moves, but at the same time, we're still relatively fresh and relatively young in that process. It's probably about 5 years after you draft players that we can start to see really in what direction they're headed. I'm a little bit concerned there. I'm not so sure, but they're businessmen. They're stockbrokers. I'm talking about Gordon and Hughes. They have a plan. They're not going to sway from it. It doesn't matter who gets hurt. They won't trade a prospect to go out and get immediate help. It doesn't matter if they overachieve and they're on the cusp of getting a playoff spot. If they still think they're in the rebuild, they're not going to go out and once again give up a prospect to put them over the hump. They're gonna stay the course. So I really like them because they've taken emotion out of the equation. And I find that a lot of management teams that have been here in the past have made a lot of their decisions based on emotion. I love Marty St. Louis because he's giving them freedom to play the way players enjoy playing, to play offensive brand of hockey. Yeah. Just go out there and do your thing. And let's not even worry about defense right now. At one point, and so it's hard to attract unrestricted free agents when you're the Montreal Canadiens for the fact that, you know, it's Montreal, the tax situation, the language situation, this, that. We all know what's, you know, the orange cones everywhere and all the potholes. And there's no beach and it's not the greatest weather in the world either.
Yeah.
But it does have its charm. But it's still hard to attract great hockey players. When players start talking, like everyone loves to play for Marty St. Louis. Everybody. And so they tell other players around the league. Others guys. So at one point, Montreal is going to be a place where when the Canadiens are going to turn the corner and they're going to be competitive, and I think that's going to be in a couple of years from now, I think the word around the league is going to be, if Marty St. Louis is still here, even better, I want to play for Marty. And if he's not, it's like, you know what? Gordon and Hughes know what they're doing. They got a plan. They're executing on it. And this team is going to go far. I want to be a part of it. So I really, really like what they're doing. Yes, I love them. And I think one day, I'll say this. I don't know if I've ever said this, but this about another management team before, but I really, truly believe deep down inside, as hard as it's going to be, and I fully recognize that, you know, out of 32 teams, only one wins the Stanley Cup. But I believe in the tenure of Gordon and or Hughes, the Canadiens will win a Stanley Cup.
That leads me into my next question. We talked with Mike Farber about this on an earlier episode or an episode of this season. And Mike Farber did a piece for TSN about the 30-year drought in Canada. Mm-hmm. You know, 93 was the last time we celebrated a cup in this country.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? When you look across the country and you look, let's take Edmonton, for example.
Yeah.
If I was an Edmonton Oilers fan, I would be going out of my mind with the talent that has gone through that town in the last 5 or 6 years. Ottawa's is another story. Toronto's another story. But what, do you think there's something that you can point to about Canadian teams that has us shitting the bed every year?
Well, there's a couple of things. So number one, in those last 30 years, there's been 2 to 3 times more American teams than there are Canadian teams. So just on numbers alone, that's one reason, right? Other than that, there's the tax situation in some of the Canadian markets is obviously not good.
That's the thing with players. Because they claim it isn't, but it is. You know it is, isn't it?
They'll take home less money unless, of course, they're getting involved in whatever, TFSAs and this and that, stuff that's beyond my level of expertise.
I think that would be a thing with anybody, though. That'd be a thing with me.
Yeah.
Okay, you can take home this much over here, or you can take home quite a bit less over here. Well, I'm going to go for the greater sum.
It helped me move to Calgary.
Yeah, no doubt.
I went, what?
Yeah.
How much?
Now, how about this? If you're an unrestricted free agent, and I give you the opportunity, or you have the opportunity to sign with Los Angeles, Anaheim, San Jose, Dallas, Florida, Tampa, just to name a few. Are you going to want to play in Canada? If I told you that if you're going to play in Florida, that there's probably going to be 4 or 5 reporters in the room, not more, and you can show up
in your flip-flops
and in your shorts, and after you leave practice, you can get in a round of golf or you can go fishing for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah.
Would you want to play in Canada? I don't say these are the only reasons because everyone's situation, of course, is particular.
Yeah.
But I mean, with all due respect to Winnipeg, I've never been there before.
Yeah.
But, you know, imagine asking that question vis-a-vis Winnipeg.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because just this week as we're recording this, they're starting to freak out in Winnipeg because attendance has dropped way off.
Yeah. There were about 4,000 to 5,000 empty seats in the previous game.
Yeah. Wow. Let me turn. I said about 20 minutes ago, I wanted to ask you about broadcasting in French.
Yeah.
Your French you learned on the street?
I learned reading newspapers and watching television.
Said, yeah.
And so my French, once again, if I haven't mastered the English language up until now, and I'm going to turn 51 here, if I haven't mastered the English language, could you imagine French? When I signed on with BPM Sports and with TVA Sports Television, and I let my friends and family know, someone in my family said to me, "Oh, what a bad move." And I said, "Why?" And they responded, "Because your French isn't good enough." And I said, "I know." And they responded and said, "The Francophones in Quebec are just so going to not like you at all." And I said, "Okay." And I said, "I disagree with you." And they said, no, trust me. I know based on prior experience and my work, this is the way it's going to go down." And I said, "You could be right, but this is what I think. I think those who will be listening and watching will just so appreciate the fact that I'm trying my best to speak their language. And I don't think they demand perfection.
No.
I think they just want the effort more than anything else."
And you know what else I think? I think you had a lot of Francophone listeners when you were on the TSN. I think there were a lot of people who were hockey fans, because the reality is in Montreal, most of us, including myself and Ted always says, "Mon français est
une vraie catastrophe."
Vraie catastrophe. Like, and I think most of us have an understanding. You listen to French sports radio all the time.
Yeah, I listen to BPM Sport.
And you know, I always preferred to watch Pierre Hood call the games on RDS.
Yeah.
And I think the same is true of French Canadian listeners. I think they're fans first. They're not listening to you for your grammar. They're hockey fans first.
I could be wrong. Once again, we're dealing with a lot bigger numbers, right?
Yeah,
there's a lot more Francophones in Quebec than there are Anglophones in Quebec. Very, very passionate fan base. Very, very passionate sports fans. But I think I was proven right. I mean, they've appreciated my efforts.
Yeah.
I don't do one collaboration without probably throwing out one or two English words, because at times, instead of waiting for that word to actually come to my head to say this is the word, I just throw it out in English and they let it go. And the support has been unbelievable. I can tell you, I'm so proud of the fact that my segments on radio and television have been really highly rated in the last year and a half that I've been doing them, like among some of the highest rated segments on those respective networks.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful. I'm lucky though. I'm really lucky. I have a fan base that's very loyal to me. I mentioned it before. It's kind of like a cult following. They care about me. I care about them. And I can't do it without them.
But I'll tell you what, you've earned it, Tony, because I worked with Tony for a couple of years at TSN 690, and I came away with two things from that. When people ask me about Tony Marinaro, I say, A, to know him is to love him.
Yeah.
Because it's the nature of sports media, right? Yeah. Fucking Marinaro, fucking asshole. No.
Yeah.
You haven't met him. You don't know him. To know him is to love him. And I've seen the work ethic firsthand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what earns you listeners and followers and fans. If you mail it in, especially sports fans, they see that from a mile away.
Well,
you've got to work hard in order to earn their trust and in order to, you know, to establish the kind of credibility that Tony has. And he's earned it. He's earned everything he's got.
I agree with you 100%.
You know, Terry, I realize I'm not everyone's cup of tea. I get it, right?
None of us are.
I never met anyone who said that, they didn't like Terry DeMonte.
Well, you're doing a more polarizing type of job than Terry does, sports media.
That's exactly what it is, right? But, you know, I could either go in, do my show, and sit on the fence. Well, I think the power play some days is good, some days is, I think it's okay. Now, if it sucks, I'm going to tell you it sucks. And if I think somebody should lose their job, I'm going to tell you that I think somebody should lose their job, right? And so I ruffle feathers, right? And it makes some people uncomfortable. It makes some people uneasy. And I ask pretty tough questions, and it makes some people uncomfortable. It makes some people uneasy. I call people out. Not everyone likes my style. It's okay. I'd rather everyone love me. Really, I do. But I know I'm not going to be unanimous. But I have to have my style. I am who I am. I never coached. I never played. So I don't have that credibility backing me up. I was the most passionate fan. And when I'm going to go on the air, whether it's radio, television, or podcasting, I'm going to be the passionate person that I am, full of passion, full of energy, and no shortage of opinions. What you see is what you get. I'm going to tell you what I think, whether you like it or not.
People appreciate that. That's, you know, you keep hearing this word in broadcasting, authenticity, authenticity. Just be who you are and say what you think. And if you don't agree with me, then that's fine.
So having said all of that, right, I'd rather you love me.
Well, sure.
But I do know this, that even those who say effing marinaro, they're saying effing because they're still listening and they're still watching.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm still getting a reaction out of
it. Yes,
And so at the end of the day, that's what I want. Love me or hate me.
Yeah.
But keep listening to me and keep watching me.
Do you think people tuned in for your singing?
I think people thought it was funny.
I did too. I loved it because it was a display of your passion.
Yeah.
It was passion that brought on. And I come from an Italian background.
Yeah. So. And Terry, I don't remember what was the last time I sang, but here it goes. Okay. Senti nell'aria c'è già la nostra canzone d'amore che va. Sing it, Peter, and go say, look, the entire city's listening to you, Peter, and they want you to pop up the city. I think they got to double shift their best players. Double shift their best players. Say it, Peter.
Well, we got the promo.
Yeah, I often wondered how you didn't have a heart attack. By the way, you grew up in LaSalle. Where's the best place to eat in LaSalle? I always get lost when I go into LaSalle.
The place that pays me, Terry.
But I know that. Well, you know
what? No free plugs, Terry.
No
free plugs.
I want to hear it because I know for sure you would only speak on behalf of people who made good food.
Yeah, so for a very, very long time, I would go to La Campagnola on Dollard, which is authentic Italian.
Yes.
And so the owners are Sicilian, so it's a lot of those traditions that I grew up with.
Yeah.
Bocce's has a great sub.
Okay.
Bocce's has a sub that you know, you'd love to eat like once a week. It hits the spot.
Yeah.
And then Manzo's has a great sub.
Yeah, that's a famous sub. Yeah,
but the Manzo sub,
yeah,
like that sub is the sub that if you're going to the electric chair in 10 minutes,
right,
that's the last meal because you won't be able to fit in anything else for the rest of your life. And Marco Gianni's obviously has some good sandwiches, and there's a couple of cafes in the area as well, and Riccia Cafe. That
does your family still do a traditional Italian thing on the weekend?
No. My parents, my dad's 84.
Yeah.
His health is, you know, it's been better.
Yeah.
But he's a warrior. If I'll tell you that his medical history is tumor in his colon, prostate cancer, 32 radiation treatments.
Oy.
Bladder cancer, bladder surgery.
Whoa.
Chemotherapy.
Whoa.
Skin cancer, surgery. Bile duct surgery,
man.
Gallbladder removed, kidney stone surgery twice, diabetic on insulin,
oof,
twice on the verge of a diabetic coma, twice hospitalized for infections on his feet, almost to the bone, and he smokes a couple of packs a day.
Jesus.
Still, yeah. So that's my dad. My mom's in better health, but of course she's had to take care of my dad so much that we'll always get together on the. So, you know, it's funny because you said, do you still do the thing on the weekends? I still probably eat at my mother's like 3 times per week.
Okay.
Hence, this is what you see is what you get, right?
Italian.
I do go over to my mother-in-law's. Yeah. And yes, no, we family's important to us.
Gotcha.
Family's important to us.
I want to touch on the boys, if you don't mind. Are you a soccer fan?
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife is a Premier League fan, and when we got married, I began to get drawn into the game, and we never miss matches on a Saturday, and so we absolutely love it. And
I love the Premier League.
I'm just so enamored with it. I was so surprised because as a typical Canadian hockey fan who thought soccer was so boring, and it isn't. It's really fantastic.
Well,
and your boys are really talented, right?
Yeah. Well, my 20-year-old was playing professionally in Spain, fourth division. He didn't have a great experience. He was playing in a small village. The only one who spoke English on the team. He wasn't buddies with anyone on the team. It was tough. We had just come out of COVID, and so he had left the home. He suffered a hip injury, and he suffered a back injury.
Yikes.
His injury is a little bit complex, so it's taken a while to try and fix. According to the specialists we've seen, he's probably going to have that kind of issue, which comes with some discomfort and pain for the rest of his life. So we're trying to find the solution there.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work out, he'll find something else to do. My 18-year-old is playing U19 second division in Portugal.
Wow.
And so, I'm really happy. And I'm really happy for him because he really wanted to pursue this. Like, he wants it badly.
So he's in Portugal?
He's in Portugal, but it's for me, who have been driving these boys to soccer ever since they're 4 years old.
Yeah.
The fact to be so far away from my son. And, I was there at the end of August until the middle of September with him.
Yeah.
But then I had to get back for work. Doing radio, TV, and podcasting, which you can do at a distance, gives you a certain flexibility.
Yeah.
So I'll go back at some point. Mind you, if you're going to watch the Canadians game and then go on after the game, it's going to be like 4 o'clock in the morning in Portugal or whatever it is. But, so I'm really happy for him, but it's really tough for me.
Yeah, it must be. It's his dad. It must be very tough.
Yeah, very tough. Yeah.
Yeah. Ted, you have to do another commercial for...
You know what? I want to talk about Italians.
Okay.
Tony will get this.
All right.
Jaguar Land Rover Laval, Nino and Renato Di Cubellis. They have a private loge at Place Belle. So they invited Terry and I to go to the Rocket game the other night.
I saw the pictures on social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the whole family was there. It was an Italian family affair. Nino and Renato were there.
His dad.
Their dad, the patriarch, Vilio, was there. Nino's sons, Sergio and Vilio, were there. They went to Italy this summer. The grandparents, the sons and daughters, the grandsons and granddaughters, the great-grandsons and great-granddaughters, they all went to Italy together, and they rented a bus, and they drove all around, and of course, they went back to the homes where the grandparents grew up. His dad went to the home where he was born, and he didn't know the people who live there now, and the people said, oh, you used to live here? Come on in. And they took him to the room where he was born.
Wow.
And I know that has nothing to do with Jaguars or Land Rovers, but the reason we like to go down that route when we talk about Jaguar Land Rover Laval is it's a family-run business with a family atmosphere. They treat Terry and I like family. They treat their staff like family. They treat their clients like family. And it just makes such a huge difference in the consumer experience when you're treated like that. If you are in the market for an upscale automobile, SUV, Land Rover, or a sporty sedan or coupe, a Jaguar, don't go or don't buy anywhere else until you go to Jaguar Land Rover Laval. And tell them Terry and Ted sent you and ask them for, you won't have to ask them for an espresso because they'll have one waiting for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful people.
We always said it was odd that a Jaguar dealership wasn't serving tea.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I've always wondered, if they would be torn if England and Italy met in the World Cup final. Did they in the last World Cup? Who played in the last World Cup final?
They beat them at the Euro.
Oh, it was a Euro. Okay, yeah. I don't know. Well, you know what? I do know. They would in a million years they wouldn't cheer for England, would they? It would have to be Italy. They'd give up the dealership if they had to cheer for England. What am I even thinking?
They beat them in their own backyard in penalty shots. Yeah. That's the worst way to lose.
Yeah, that was a killer. Yeah, it was an absolute killer. Because my wife is a massive Manchester United fan.
Really, yeah.
So I had to be quiet because she was cheering for England.
Yeah, me too. I felt so bad for England when Italy beat them.
Yeah. Our last tip of the cap is actually somewhere we should take you right now.
I need to go there. I need to go to Mettre La Bonne Heure, and I need to lie down on one of their spectacular mattresses and have a little nap.
I brought Ted to the very first location of Mettre La Bonne Heure. It opened years ago on Gouin Boulevard in St. Genevieve. It's such a beautiful store. And as always, every location that you go to is run by an amazing staff who welcome you with open arms and will tuck you in, just like Ted got tucked in by the manager, Kevin, when Ted was looking for some bedding the other day. So I took him to the Mettre La Bonne Heure store.
What a great name when you think about it, right? Because every time you hit the mattress, whether you're sleeping or you're doing something else, there's a lot of bonheur that comes out of it, let me tell you.
That's exactly right. And they again, family run, family owned. They deal with mostly Canadian and Quebec suppliers. They're very proud of that. They're very proud of their staff. And you'll see, Ted knows this now, it's a different kind of shopping experience.
Well, where else would you go where they tell you to take off your shoes and lie down, and then they tuck you in? I needed a duvet, and he actually got me to lie on the bed, and he put the duvet on top of me, and he said, "How does that feel?"
Yeah.
And I rolled over and said, "I'll let you know in a couple hours." Nighty-night.
Mattresses, bedding, and you can shop online at mettrelabonheure.ca and use the Terry and Ted promo code and get a really, really nice discount, not just online, but in the store. Tony, you've been very, very generous with your time.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed this. Yeah. I really enjoyed this. Yeah.
As
a lot
have
of fun.
I. And I'm so happy for your success.
Yeah, we really are. You. We're thrilled for you, Tony, because you took all of the breaks that were presented with you or to you, and you combined it with hard work, and you proved the naysayers wrong, and you left smaller things for bigger things, and that's what anybody wants when they're trying to plan a career. I'm happy for you. Good
Thank
for
you, Terry. Look, make no mistake. Radio was my first love.
Absolutely.
I'll always love it.
Right? He reminded me when he was telling the story off the top, it reminded me of you. You were like that before you ever got into the business.
Yeah, I was
glued to the radio, wanting to meet those guys.
And still to this day, this because of the way the radio business is now, and because I don't speak French, this is all I got. I mean, this and it's not that I need to do it. I don't have to have a... You know, nobody has to have a fundraiser for me. I put money away and I'm properly retired.
I could use fundraiser. But anyway.
I enjoy it. I still enjoy it. I still love having these conversations in front of a microphone. I still get a kick out of it.
So
it
do
never
I.
Goes,
and
you never know goes what? Away.
So the podcast that I do, I obviously do it at a distance, right?
Yeah.
And it's not in studio.
Yeah.
So today for me to be here and we're doing it in studio, it feels like
radio,
like
a little
radio
bit,
a little bit, right?
This is why I fly in for it, because I want that vibe. Yeah.
I love today. Yeah. And you know what? Like I said, I love the radio. And, you know, there's no regrets. I'm not going to lie to you because I'm an open guy. There's one pain in my heart, and it's there, and it'll never go away. I would have loved an opportunity to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Right? I think you had that opportunity.
Yeah, I did.
And, right?
Yeah,
not everyone
does. I was grateful for that.
Having said that, right? I'm such an emotional type.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be able to get through it.
Yeah.
I know you got emotional on your last
But it would have been real, Tony. That would have been fine. Because
the
it would have been real.
The whole province
That was me. I was always just myself on the air.
Yeah.
And Stedden and Bun Clack at the end there. I just, it's like you're talking about. I was myself.
Yeah. I remember, I really remember that day, and I listened to the whole show, but the one that really got to me was, Pure Hood asking for Can't Stop Loving You to be the song.
Yeah.
And it was very touching.
He was very emotional.
Yeah, he was very emotional. Yeah. You were too. And so were all of we listening, by
That's
the way.
Nice.
And so, look, I loved it. I've turned the page. No more looking back. I'm looking forward. I'm doing really well. What I really love the most out of everything is right now I have flexibility and I have time. I can do what I'm doing, what I love doing anywhere in the world. I went to Portugal. I stayed there for 3 weeks. I came back 10 days later. I went to Florida with my other son. We went to watch Lionel Messi. Oh, nice. You know, wow, we spent $2,000 on four tickets.
Yeah.
And he didn't play because he was hurt.
Oh my God.
Right?
Jesus
Christ. But you know what the good news is? I could afford the $2,000 now, right? I could actually think of actually buying the tickets. But all kidding aside, radio was great for me. Podcasting has been amazing. The flexibility. I love the people. I love my audience. I love my Sick Army. I love my Sick community. I've had a chance to meet legends like yourselves. For me today, this is a day I'm never going to forget being in studio with you guys.
That's very kind. Thank you, Tony.
You're very welcome.
The Sick Podcast, Tony Marinaro, our special guest today.
Standing by, the Terry and Ted Podcast has been brought to you by the UPS Store Canada. The UPS Store near you is locally owned and operated by a member of your small business community.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.